I mean, and I okay. think I think it's at some point the ability to sit down with people and have a beer and eat some delicious slow cooked pork is the beginning of some kind of a conversation.
Because it's the most primal thing, eating, or maybe sex is. What is, like, if you had to choose between a great meal mm-hmm. and mediocre sex, what would you choose?
Well, that's really a calls for a qualitative answer. I mean, you know, depends who's cooking and who's fucking, you know.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. It's been well over a month, and I'll explain all of that shortly. I've never taken a hiatus this long on the show before, but it gave me a chance to look at food culture, what we like to talk about on the show, and from all angles, it's amazing how much can change inside of a month or so on the food landscape. It really is amazing how much happens in the world of food and how quickly things pile up. Since we broke, and we're looking at maybe almost 2 months here, this is what's happened since the last time we talked. Ludo Bites America premieres on the Sundance Channel, as well as on iTunes in high definition, which makes me a complete liar and gave you a better chance, a better way to watch the show. So, once again, my show is loaded with misinformation. Congratulations. El Bulli served its last meal, closing the book on one of the most successful runs in the history of restaurants. So that's done. Anthony Bourdain's No Reservations returned, bringing us one of the best episodes in recent history. He shared his last meal at El Bulli, accompanied by Jose Andreas, who's always great. Regrettably, this episode has been bookended by several forgettable episodes, and the show is tired, which makes this next announcement, it makes more sense. That would be the announcement of a new show from Tony and 0.0 called The Layover, and that debuts in November on the Travel Channel. Anthony will spend 24 to 48 hours in a city and covers the essential must-see places and food in the cities, such as New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Miami, Hong Kong, Singapore, London, Rome, Montreal, and Amsterdam. And one of the things he'll be featuring from Los Angeles, I believe, will be Ludo's Fried Chicken Truck. So I'm excited to see that. The rumors of a new Top Chef filming in Texas has surfaced. There's no date for a premiere just yet, but there's going to be a season 9. And Emeril Lagasse returns as a judge. We've had food recalls, a lot of them actually. Cargill, this is a big one, Cargill in Springdale, Arkansas, announced a recall of 36 million pounds of ground turkey. It's the third largest meat recall in history. Fresh and Easy recalled organic baby spinach. Garden Highway Central Market recalled numerous cut fruit products. I don't know what the hell that means. They had salmonella. Eagle Produce recalled their cantaloupes, also for salmonella. In Oak Park, Michigan, this story's crazy. The city decides to pick a fight with this woman who started a vegetable garden in her front yard. And it chewed up what limited amount of money she had, you know, to take her to court because she dared to grow some vegetables. She planted a garden after the city tears up her front yard to repair a sewer line. So her response to the city was to plant a beautiful garden instead. Julie Bass was her name. Rick Sellers from Pacific Brew News, he brought this to my attention. They charged her with a misdemeanor for planting basil, cabbage, carrots, cucumbers, and tomatoes. I mean, association rules are one thing. But this is crazy. Getting out of hand. And I've got a very loose association where we live. Thomas Keller's planning a pop-up version of the French Laundry at Harrods in London. $400 for a 9-course menu, lunch or dinner. That's steep. He also opened a new takeout eatery behind Ad Hoc in Yountville called Addendum. They'll serve picnic grub for $16.50, either a fried chicken lunch or a barbecue rib lunch. And you can even eat it on their lawn. They've got lawn furniture, some picnic furniture. You can just sit out there and eat it. It's open Thursday through Saturday. It's like Ad Hoc to go, basically. It's right behind Ad Hoc. McDonald's added fruit to its Happy Meals, then touted itself as being health conscious. Alrighty. Oh, this is great. Burger King split with the ad agency that they've been using for 7 years, putting an end to commercials with that creepy king in them. I hated those commercials. Never made sense to me. David Chang's new food magazine, Lucky Peach, debuted, and people are calling it the best food magazine in recent history. I haven't seen it yet, but it's getting really rave reviews. This is nuts. Applebee's launched a food truck, joining the ever-expanding trend of food trucks. Now, pretty soon, we're going to be eating all of our meals on a curb somewhere. And what gets me is that the idea behind most food trucks is that it's food that you can't get anywhere else, because most food trucks are actually one-off businesses that don't have a restaurant. So it's an opportunity to eat some food that you wouldn't get anywhere else. Now, are you telling me that there isn't an Applebee's on almost every town in the U.S.? And seriously, would you go out of your way to eat Applebee's off of paper plates while sitting in a gutter? I mean, really? Wouldn't you just, if you were going to have Applebee's, you'd go to the restaurant? Paula Deen, this happened recently, she called out Tony Bourdain in the New York Post for saying some nasty things about her and other Food Network stars on Twitter. So Bourdain recently told TV Guide that she was the most dangerous person in America. And he questioned her character, as he always has. So Paula Deen tells the New York Post, "You don't have to like my food, or Rachel's, Sandra's, or Guy Fieri's. But it's another thing to attack our character. I wake up every morning happy for where I am in life. It's not all about the cooking, but the fact that I can contribute by using my influence to help people all over the country. In the last 2 years, my partners and I have fed more than 10 million hungry people by bringing meat to food trucks." So attacking your character is bad when you heavily promote a company like Smithfield Farms. That's bad, right? Because they've got a lot of dirty laundry. We all know about that. Attacking your character is bad when you have diabetes and you hide it from your fans and you continue to promote the cooking that you do, the high-fat stuff. I get it. You're a nice person. He's called her a nice person. I call her a nice person. I just think a lot of what she does is irresponsible. And that's all about your character. Now, what's Bourdain thinking? That we shouldn't attack the character of Rachel Ray, who's been recently called out for being a shitty tipper. Yeah, you're right. You guys are all great. Lots of cookbook news. A rumor got out that Beyonce, who was a self-proclaimed disaster in the kitchen. I mean, this chick, she burned salad. Apparently, she was being encouraged by that pain in the ass Gwyneth Paltrow to write a cookbook, just like she did. And if you didn't hear, Paltrow released a cookbook a couple months ago called My Father's Daughter, and it got really good reviews. But it makes me want to puke when celebrities think they can do it all. I mean, granted, she won an Academy Award. I find her to be a marginal actress at best. A shitty country singer. She's on Glee, singing country. Horrible. I just don't want to know what her food tastes like, let alone follow her recipes. She was on Oprah once. She cooked some whole wheat, gluten-free health food shit, and Oprah said the next day it was the worst thing she's ever put in her mouth. Farron Adria announced a new cookbook. It's going to be released in October called The Family Meal, Home Cooking with Farron Adria. It'll feature nearly 100 delicious recipes by Farron Adria that anyone can prepare, inspired by the dishes eaten every day by the staff at El Bulli. Heston Blumenthal announced a new cookbook, Heston Blumenthal at Home, which will also be released in October. October seems to be the month to release cookbooks. He said it will prove that science can dramatically improve the way we eat. The first part of the book maps the new techniques in 15 sections, including taste and flavor, stocks and infusing, brining, curing, marinating, and macerating, and then sections on proper care of meat, fish, pasta, and other dishes, about 150 recipes that he's going to put in that book. Christina Tosi from Mama Fuku Milk Bar is releasing a book in October titled, you guessed it, Mama Fuku Milk Bar. David Chang is great, but Christina Tosi does all the desserts. Compost cookie, chunky chocolate chip cookies started with crunchy salt pretzels and coffee grounds, the crack pie, which you've probably heard of, it's a sugary, buttery confection, cereal milk ice cream, which I've made. Every part of the nutritional breakfast is in that, you know, that cereal-infused milk. Good stuff. Dessert will be served. Lots of writing going on, and some writing that has either stopped or changed. Some friends of mine stopped blogging about food and other things. Some friends of mine started blogging. And even I started a new blog completely unrelated to food so I could exercise my writing chops without having constraints. Because sometimes I just get tired of talking and writing about food. I want it to be about other things. Other things I'm interested in, like, you know, booze, sports, general things, you know, news. There was even a really important blog that basically stopped dead in its tracks because of health reasons. She's back, but a single post per month at this point. I'll take what I can get from her. Carol Bleymeyer, who did the French Laundry at home and now does Linny at home, she provided a lot of inspiration that got me started in the first place. So she's kind of back on track, but it's slow going. Miller Coors discontinued production of MGD 64 lemonade beer, which should piss off about four people who actually drank it. I guess there's always Mike's Hard Lemonade for these people, but on a really interesting note, Miller Coors, listen to this, they saw second quarter sales drop, but their net income increased. Now, if you're wondering how that's possible, it's called, we raised the prices on our shitty beer. Because how else do you sell less, but make more? You overprice your product. So the next time you're in the supermarket, in a liquor store, I want you to compare how much that shit costs next to a six-pack of craft beer. And then get back to me about how expensive it is to drink the way I do, the way we do. Here's the difference. Craft brewers aren't making an arm and a leg showing record profits because it costs more to make their beer. The ingredients cost more. The time costs more. It only costs what it does because of how much it costs to actually make it. On that note, I'm thirsty. What are we going to drink today? I've got Life and Limb 2. It's a collaboration from Dogfish Head and Sierra Nevada. It's an American strong ale. It's 10% ABV, kind of strong. I like these collaborations. Stone does a few a year now. Dogfish Head has been collaborating quite a bit. This is the second time they made this beer with Sierra Nevada. I didn't get a chance to taste the first one, but I'm definitely tasting the second one. And they recently brewed with Patrick over at the brewery for a collaboration. So it's great to see breweries working together to make great beers. The first time I ever tasted a collaboration, hold on, I'm going to take a sip. Oh, that's great. The collaboration I had, the very first one, was Avery Brewing and Russian River. They came together. They brewed a beer called Collaboration, Not Litigation. They both had a beer on their list called Salvation. And instead of suing each other over the rights to the name because they were friends, they decided to blend the two beers together to make this great brew. Now, I didn't get a chance to taste a lot of those beers, a lot of the collaborations that have come out. And again, with this Life and Limb, I didn't taste the first one. So I don't know what to compare this to. I don't know what the first one was about. But I will say this is a fine beer. It's strong. I mean, it's definitely a strong ale, getting near that barley wine territory. Dark brown, nice tan head, smells of light chocolate and caramel. You can taste some of that caramel, that rich brown sugar flavor that comes through. And it does kind of, it lays a little heavy. It's a little sweet, but I like that. It's not cloyingly sweet, but it's heavy on the malt, you know. It's at 10%. It's a lot of malt to make a beer like this. And I like that, for the record. You know, I'm sure you could age a beer like this, and it'll sit for a very long time. But I'm more of a catch-and-release man lately. So with many beers coming out now, I rarely get a chance to taste a lot of the beers. People ask me, you know, have you had this? 2 years ago, I'd say yes every time, because I was drinking a lot of these different beers. But now, it's gotten pretty rare for me. I got backed up on my homebrew even, so I need to catch up. You can visit dogfish.com for information on this beer, distribution information. It could be available near you, whatever you wherever you buy fine beers. And for the record, if you want to know about a pairing, vanilla ice cream is what I'd pair this with. I think it'd go great with some vanilla ice cream, but right now I'm going to pair it with this show. So, listen, I wasn't going to talk about this until the end of the year because I felt that maybe by then it would be all over and we could discuss it like it was old news, prepare for 2012, like I thought 2011 was going to go. But as things go, things tend to take on a mind of their own. You can't control things, and nothing's really like what you thought it was going to be. Now, bear with me on this. I feel that you have a right to know this, if only because I feel like getting it out in the open and not hiding it from everybody, like it's a big secret, you know, would be easier on me. Most of you who already know me personally or friends with me on Facebook or friends of Katrina know about this already, but for those casual listeners who think I may have pod faded or, you know, stopped giving a shit about doing the show, this is pretty much for you. December 7th of last year.
December 7th, a date which will live in infamy.
Yeah, pretty much like that. Katrina was diagnosed with stage 2 invasive carcinoma. It was a 5-centimeter tumor that they found in her breast. It was a cancerous tumor that was very aggressive. It was on its way to stage 3 in a hurry. Stage 2 is very treatable. Stage 3 is getting into danger territory, but treatable. Stage 4 is serious, and there is no stage 5. Okay, so it scared the shit out of us for about 12 hours. And then we got to business. It was time to you know, take care of this. She has been blessed with an amazing array of doctors, from her surgeon to her radiologist, her oncologist, her radiation oncologist, and plastic surgeon. When you get news like this, it is absolutely devastating. And the only thing that can take the sting out of that is the luck of the draw when it comes to getting the right team of doctors and having loving friends and loving family around you to help you through it. And let me tell you something. We got the luck of the draw. I could not have wished for a better trifecta of doctors for her to go through this. They're capable, they're aggressive, very intelligent, and most of all, they care. You know, these are doctors that hug you when they see you. They hug you when you leave. I can't count on both hands how many times they've told us how badly they felt that we had to go through this, that we were such nice people. And that helps, believe me, it does, especially hearing it from surgeons. So Katrina started her chemotherapy right after Christmas, and it went through May of this year. There were 13 treatments of chemotherapy, which pretty much killed most of the cancer, we thought. 6 weeks later, she's ready to have her surgery, and they think they may have found more cancer in the same breast. So when they performed her surgery, sure enough, there was more cancer there, but they removed it. She was recovering from that surgery and is now undergoing more chemotherapy to eradicate whatever might be left and radiation treatments at the same time. And that will end soon. After that, we'll have a couple of months before she goes in for a second surgery. And this has all taken place this year. And it's been very consuming of all of our time and our energy. So everything that I've done on this show this year has been, it's had that weight on it. When I interviewed Zane, as I was packing my stuff up in his living room, I told him about what's going on. He said, you know, he knows this is tough and that we'll be okay. And in a way, doing the show, and I bring that show up in particular because it hit me then, doing the show has been kind of therapeutic for me. But after a while, I found it hard sometimes to find it within myself to talk about food, chefs, restaurants, news, happenings, beer, anything. Because quite frankly, my only thoughts have really been with Katrina. She's been incredibly brave. She's taken a fight to this fucking cancer like you've never seen anyone take it. And everyone around us has said how proud they are of her, and I've been in awe watching her win this battle. Now, it's not over, and it won't be over for a long time, but we have the upper hand right now. And in our family, we've had quite a cancer year, and not all results have been like Katrina's. Living with cancer is a mystery, really. You never know when it's going to decide to pick another fight. It's like those sneaky insurgents, you know, it comes without knowing. You know, it never announces itself, and all of a sudden there's an IED. Cancer, basically, is a big pussy. That's why you see kids getting leukemia. It figures, hey, it's just a kid, I'll pick a fight with it, easy pickings. Yeah, right. I've seen more than my fair share of heroes during chemotherapy and radiation. People are not laying down for cancer, especially not us. And I've said, sitting in a room full of people, mostly women, getting chemotherapy treatments and swimming in their positive attitudes, it makes you realize that there are some very strong people out there who aren't going to take shit off of cancer. Cancer beats people every day, but you have to know this. It gets its ass kicked a lot more than you might think. It is beatable, and it takes positive energy to do that. Katrina's strength and positive attitude through all of this has been inspiring for everybody. Friends of ours who have been through this told us to try to laugh every day. So we've done that. We do that anyway. So it wasn't really a stretch for us. But sometimes my jokes are marginally funny to begin with. So I've done the best I can to write funnier ones. It's made me a better writer. Okay? And when once you have cancer in your life, they say it changes you forever. And you try to make those changes positive things. So we wanted something positive to come out of this, to emerge stronger emotionally with a brighter outlook on everything. Because sometimes you just don't get a second chance. You know, people ask her all the time how she's doing, and she says, well, look at it this way. I've been poisoned, mutilated, and burned. Considering all of that, I'm doing pretty good. Just a great outlook. So when I felt the show was becoming more of a burden than a help to me, that's when I just decided I'm going to take a breather. You know, I golfed. Golf helps me relax. I cook, as I always cook, helps me relax. I read my books. I read about the Audria brothers, about the war in Afghanistan, about the Yankees, anything that helped me get my head right. I experimented with new recipes, Jose Andreas. I stuck my nose back into my charcuterie ring. I make making a lot of stuff. I make guanciale, a ham, bacon, sausages. Right now I'm doing pancetta. You know, and I'm continuing to golf. My mental health is the one thing I cannot afford to lose because I need to keep my head in the game that matters the most, which is this battle with cancer. So it's important to stay on top of things with your doctors. Listen, for all the women listening to this show, I know this sucks, and it's not the most pleasant thing in the world, but make sure you go for those yearly mammograms. It's very important. Cancer can come fast and swift. If you miss by even a few months, it could be the difference between mild chemotherapy and what we're going through right now. And I want to give a special shout out to Marie Stringer, Don's sister-in-law, was incredibly supportive. She told me there was a support group of breast cancer survivors who started making these t-shirts to raise money for awareness. And there were all these aggressive t-shirts toward cancer, which I find really inspiring. They've got the usual, you know, fuck cancer shirts, but the one that's just absolutely hilarious, and if you're close to the situation, you'd realize just how funny it was. Because a lot of women who go through breast cancer have mastectomies to ensure that the cancer is not going to return, and then they have implants put in after everything's done. So the t-shirt says, "Of course they're fake. The other ones tried to kill me." Anyway, she's doing fine. I'm doing fine. I just wanted you to know that if it seemed like, you know, when I did do a show that was kind of like mailing it in, I was probably mailing it in. And I know at least three shows that I mailed in myself. And I felt bad for doing it, and I thought, if I'm going to do it like this, I'm just not going to do it. And for all of you who have sent your positive vibes, your prayers, good spirits, all that, you have left all these nice messages on Facebook, thank you. And for those of you thinking of us now, thank you. In advance, I thank you. As I told Katrina Surgeon when she came out of surgery to tell me how she was doing a couple of months ago, cancer's a bitch, but now it's our bitch. So there's a lot I won't talk about here because this show is about my life as a foodie. But it's not always just about my life, all right? I don't talk about my friends' divorces or the issues I'm having, you know, outside the show, personally, professionally, anything. It's about my life as a foodie. So sometimes things cross into that life, and I felt like this was one of those things. So thanks for bearing with me and bearing through this. So enough talk about cancer, all right? Let's play some upbeat music. What do you have? Dude, come on. Some upbeat, something, you know, electronic or something. Yeah, that's nice. What is that, the Blue Stolly? Yeah, we'll take that. Hey, check out iTunes. Link on the website, mylifeisafoodie.com. We'll put a link out there for this stuff. I had recorded a segment with Don and recapping a really cool lunch experience we had back in June, but the audio didn't come out as well as I'd hoped because it was on location, and I'm going to ditch the audio, but I want to share the experience, and I'm sorry I couldn't include Don on this because it really was a unique experience that we had together. The day of Katrina's surgery was long. It was delayed 2 hours. She had 4 hours in recovery. We really didn't get into her room until 10 that night, and I'd eaten like once that day because eating wasn't on my priority list. I didn't care. So the next morning, Don texts me on my phone, asking me if I'd be interested in getting lunch with him, and they let me spend the night in Katrina's room with her, which was nice. So Katrina wanted me to go home, shower, get some lunch. And she was having her girlfriends that were going to visit that day. So I decided I went home. Don meets me at my place, says he's going to take me to Brazilian barbecue. Now, if you've never had Brazilian barbecue, it's very simple. You sit down at a table. You're given a card. On one side, it's red. On the other side, it's green. If you keep the card turned green, the servers will start appearing at your table, asking you if you're interested in whatever they have. On skewers, all meat. There's ribeye, pork tenderloin, chicken hearts, quail, many different skewers, all cooked over hardwood. Now, along with this is a buffet of side dishes, rice, beans, assorted seafood, really delicious stuff. Now, I've done this once before, but the place I went to was more like a burnt-out buffet line in Las Vegas than like this place. We were at Agora Churrasqueria in Irvine, and it was beyond classy. First, Don orders this caipirinhas with cachaça. I screw these names up, I'm sorry. Cachaça, lime, and sugar. Very sweet, very strong. Then along comes this basket of cheese bread puffs that looked a lot like Gougères, which is a French bread puff with cheese. Lots of flour, cheese, butter. Really delicious. If you've never had Gougères, you should try this. But these were Brazilian, and it was a Brazilian version called, and I'm going to muck this up because I never get the stuff right, Pão de Queijo. And I can hear Don right now tell me, no, wrong, because I can't get the name right. Neither can you. We're going to call it Brazilian cheese bread, okay? They were so addicting, and it was a total rookie move at an all-you-can-eat restaurant to fill up on this stuff. But we polished the basket before any meat could even get there. And I asked Don if he had a recipe for this, and he said he did. So I had him email it to me so I could make some. I'll share the recipe with you in a minute. When the meat started coming, and boy, did it come fast, furious, it was just really, really delicious. I mean, I swore there was some special seasoning on it. I asked Don what it was that they used on this meat, and he said nothing. Just really good meat, some sea salt, and hardwood that they cook it over. And that's it. Just salt, smoke, and you're doing Brazilian barbecue. And it's just base, primal, you know, barbecue. And I know this might be the only time that I'd be eating like this on this particular day. So an all-you-can-eat buffet was perfect, and I made sure I was really full when I left. So we had three of these Brazilian cheese puffs left on our table. I asked the waiter if I could take them home in a box because I wanted to bring them to Katrina in her room so she could try them. But he looks at me and he goes, no, sir, this is an all-you-can-eat buffet. They don't have doggy bags. So I did something only an old person would do. I took out a napkin. I wrapped the bread up in these little in the little napkin, and I slipped them into my briefcase. Yeah, because Katrina had to taste these things. So I brought them back to her room, and it was like a blessing in disguise because, you know, she hadn't eaten much. The food in the hospital is, you know, hospital food. So she loved them, and I told her I'd get the recipe from Don. So here's what you need to make these things. Paio de queijo, and I know I screwed it up, Brazilian cheese bread. The key is the flour. In Brazil, they use polvido azeo flour. God, I just suck at foreign languages. But if you can't find that, it's tapioca flour, basically. Tapioca flour is what I use. It'll work just fine. It's the same thing. The difference is that polvido flour has a sour taste to it. Asian markets carry tapioca flour. So if you have like a 99 Ranch or any Asian market, you should be able to get this stuff pretty easily. So 1 cup of tapioca flour sifted into a bowl, 1/2 cup of all-purpose flour sifted into the bowl, add 1 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of rapid rise yeast, baker's yeast, 3/4 cup of grated Parmesan cheese, 1/2 cup of milk, 3 tablespoons of unsalted butter, melted or softened, and then 1 large egg at room temperature. Mix this well. If you've got a stand mixer, you can use a paddle until the mix turns to a sticky mass. About 60 seconds should do the job. If you're doing it by hand, may the Lord be with you. It's a tough job because it gets really gummy. Cover the bowl with plastic wrap. Allow the mixture to sit for 1 full hour. This will give the yeast time to do its thing. And then set your oven to 350, line a cookie sheet with parchment paper, and start scooping out the mix with a tablespoon into semi-round balls onto the cookie sheet. Bake them for about 20 minutes or until they're golden brown. Now, I bought this silicon mold from Williams-Sonoma. It's for the Thomas Keller Bouchons, but it works for any mini muffin or small cake situation. It's a little pricey, but it's just ridiculously easy to cook stuff, and they slip right out. I found that works perfectly for this. The little breads rise perfectly, the tops get nice and toasty, and the cheese breads are going to be dense, okay? You want this. It's not like regular bread, you know, that's nice and light inside. It's cheese bread. It's more cheese than bread. It's perfect with some melted butter on top. I have it with wine, beer, or as a brunch snack with coffee, but they go best with caipirinhas.
I told the cashier, do something. You know, they're leaving, and she couldn't do anything, so I just told her, watch my purse.
Watch my purse. You know what that means when someone says, hold your purse? That means business. Police don't like citizens getting directly involved if they see criminal activity because it's really dangerous, to be honest. But Monique Lawless was so angry when she saw three young men allegedly shoplift 3 cases of beer from a Houston Walmart where she was shopping. She leaped right into action. Look at the video right there. There she is. Look at her. Jumped right up on the hood of that car. She chased them outside and jumped on the car before they sped away. They didn't get far before the police caught them.
Now, if you cook, and you cook well, I'm sure you get this once in a while, and it's a nice compliment to hear, believe me. It gets annoying after the 30th time you hear it when someone says, when are you going to open a restaurant? Now, at first, I was honored. Friends would tell me that, then relatives, then friends of friends, people, strangers that we'd have in our house would say the same thing. Co-workers, even bosses that I've had have said this to me. And I finally started telling them why I will never open a restaurant because I gave it thought. I gave it serious thought as late as last year sometime. My friend Dave Lieberman, who writes for OC Weekly here in California, wrote a blog post about this subject earlier this month, and it made me realize that perhaps it was time I brought this subject up on the show. For all the reasons that I would find it awesome, there are more reasons why it wouldn't be for me, my family, or the show, ultimately for everybody. Dave listed 6 reasons, and they're all very good ones, and we'll elaborate. You don't get mental health days, like I used recently. True. In fact, you don't get days off at all for at least the first year, maybe twice. You know, I talked to the guy at Sushilicious. It's a tough run. Seriously, when you open a new restaurant, even if you've got experience, you're working all the time. The rules for restaurants are very strict. Also true, the penalties are so stiff that if you break them, it could be like walking a tightrope every day. It's hard. Restaurants are more about business than they are about food. And I'll expand on this subject in a minute because you'd puke if you found out how much bullshit you have to deal with just to put together a business plan for something that isn't even a restaurant, but as long as it involves food service, it's tough. Dave listed that restaurants have some certain percentage of rude people. Now, this is true for any business, but in the hospitality business, it's very true. You deal with rude people every day. But feeding rude people and making them happy when you'd rather throw hot oil in their face, that's a bit much to ask for when you're not making a whole lot of profit. He said that opening a restaurant requires consistency. And if you think that doesn't sound hard, try making a stew taste the very same way every time you make it. And by the very same way, I mean you can't add an extra pinch of this or that just in case some pain-in-the-ass customer who's got a very sensitive palate decides it's not how it tasted last week and he's not coming back. This, despite the fact that he probably had 3 cigarettes before coming in. Now, it happened to me reason why I realized I was never going to really be a professional brewer. I made IPA for the first time, and it was delicious. Maybe some of the best beer I've ever tasted. It was just bang on good. And everybody told me it was the best IPA they'd ever have. Don comes to me and says, make it again. I couldn't. I could never. Since then, I have never been able to duplicate that recipe because I used different types of hops, whole leaf, fresh, dried, you name it. And it's hard to duplicate that. It's really hard. Once you get a good product, you've got to be consistent, and it's harder than it looks. And it also means if you open a restaurant, you pretty much have to say goodbye to a social life. And I don't know about you, but I barely have a social life to begin with. And I'm not going to give that up now, just so I could feed some people. Last year, I toyed around with the idea of perhaps opening a small breakfast-lunch type of place. It would have been a disaster, especially now. I've worked in restaurants, but at my age, it would have been absolute suicide. So instead, I thought, maybe I'll open an artisanal charcuterie business. Make small batches of bacon, sausages, ham, use locally raised hogs, do things the old way, long cures, aged products, all done by hand, smoked over applewood. Seemed like a real plan. My product was good. I've got connections. I could start small, build it up. When I found out how many hoops that I have to jump through with the health department, the state, the city, the FDA, a host of other organizations that would really want a piece of the pie, the realization is that manufacturing my own products would be a lot harder and more expensive than I was willing to really deal with. So it went to a manufacturing thing where I would end up being a businessman, and that's not what I wanted to do. I love to cook at home. I love to create my own charcuterie products at home. I love to share them with my friends and family. In fact, I don't like to eat out a lot because I like to cook at home. I love being in my kitchen. I love to eat at my table, drink my own stuff, my beer, my wine, cider, whatever. I love sharing it with people. But to turn it into a business would be turning off the one thing that gives me the most joy. And I just don't know why I'd ever want to do that. People do this because they love it. I get it. But it takes a lot of sacrifice, and I admire anyone who's willing to take that sacrifice. Nguyen Tran at Starry Kitchen told me they work their asses off all the time. They literally go days without a day off, and their days are very, very long, and the risks are really high. This is a guy who ran an underground restaurant for years before the health department closed him down. So they had to go legitimate. They worked hard, and they still work hard. And look at some of Dave's points, the legitimate points. Rude people. I deal with rude accountants sometimes, and I want to choke them. Can you imagine dealing with a rude redneck who didn't like that you cooked a steak a little rare, or that he found your sauce to be too runny, or that you went light on the salt? This is a guy who just 3 hours ago was probably knuckle deep in a packet of Skoll and a haze of Coors Light, but somehow he got dragged to your nice restaurant by his girlfriend who wanted a night out. He's going to criticize your cooking. And why? Because he can. Because you have to take it. Otherwise, the Asian invasion on Yelp will eat you alive and ruin what little reputation you have. The pressures of working retail when I was younger are still fresh in my brain. I don't need to relive those days, right? I'm too old for it. I've come really far as a professional doing the things I'm paid well to do, and that's enough. I mean, look, say you love to ride your bike, and I suggest you enter the Tour de France. Or maybe you love to golf, and you're really good at golf, and I said, you should become a pro at a golf course or join the PGA Tour. And look, we enjoy sex, right? But we're not thinking about a career in porn, right? I mean, just because you love to do something and you happen to be relatively decent at it, it doesn't necessarily mean you should go into business. I know many who have done this, and in most cases, it simply didn't turn out well. It would, with almost all certainty, with me, end badly. I mean, look at Ludo and Chrissy. It's far more easier and affordable for them to do these pop-ups at existing restaurants than it would be for them to open a restaurant of their own. Lindy and Grundy, the stories I heard from them about the health department, the city ordinances, made my skin crawl. It was tough to open that place. That's just a meat shop. They had to buy a special hood or a special switch for their wall, or they couldn't open the business. And these are pieces that have to be purchased from certain vendors at a price that is non-negotiable. I mean, they're telling you have to buy a wall switch and they're going to charge you 900% more than you know it's worth. I don't think so. And look, we were talking about El Bulli before, right? Did you know that after all of the success that that restaurant had, after reservations were sold out all the time, so hard to get a reservation there, sold out every night, the price of dinner at that place was nose-bleedingly expensive. It turns out they never made any money. It all went back into research, development, to keep the doors open. If a restaurant like El Bulli can't make money, you tell me there's a real future in owning a restaurant. So to those of you who pass along that compliment to your friends and to others, thank you. It means a lot to those of us who are passionate about cooking, without education, without the education required to actually get into that business. Thanks. But the dedication, the love, not to mention the absolute talent that it takes to pull it off. Way too much to ask of me anyway.
These days, it could be any grocery store in America. Walk down the aisles, and you come face to face with sticker shock.
I thought it was closer to $3.50. I didn't even pay attention. It's almost $4.
In Margate, Florida, Farrah Crow says the grocery bills for her family of four seem to grow with each passing week.
It's a horrible time with school shopping that we need to do, and, you know, I'm hoping that most of his things still fit him from last year.
It's no illusion, prices have jumped over the past year, in some cases dramatically. As of the end of June, government data showed a dozen grade A eggs cost 19 cents more than a year earlier, $1.68 a carton. Chicken cost 7 cents more, $1.30 a pound. Ground beef was up 33 cents to $3.62 a pound. A gallon of milk up 33 cents in a year to $3.62 a gallon. Coffee up $1.54 to $5.24 a pound. And prices are expected to keep climbing, perhaps 3 to 4% this year alone. The weather gets much of the blame. Heat, drought, and flooding have sent wheat prices soaring, and corn prices hit record highs in June. What you may not know is that food prices are tied very closely to fuel prices, and not just because of the cost of shipping, but because corn and soybeans are used in ethanol. The good news is right now, fuel prices are going down.
That means that basic food ingredient prices are going to fall, and you're going to see that in your grocery store, you know, 3 to 6 months down the road.
But Dorothy Parks says prices only seem to go in one direction.
Once they go up, they usually stay up, no matter what happens. And it's very hard. It's hard for me with what I'm getting. I get Social Security, my husband's Social Security.
Her strategy, lots of coupons, fewer dinners out, and a hope for better harvests ahead. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
That's sad, right? We knew food was going to get expensive. We talked about this on the show earlier this year. Stories surfaced about gas prices increasing. They said farmers were going to have to charge more for their food. And given the increases, I think it's still a lot more affordable to eat here in our country than it is in other countries. And I know you hate hearing that because we hear it all the time about gas. Jesus Christ, gas is $4 a gallon now. Inevitably, someone's going to tell you, look, try living here in Europe or Brazil. You know who you are. It's twice that amount here. It's been that way for years. Okay, true. But look at where you're living there. Are you driving all over Hell's Half Acre? No. Things are tighter, they're closer. You can walk. You can take mass transit or ride your bike. So you're driving less. They drive less in New York City than they do here in California. But most of us don't live in a closed environment like that. If we need to get to the grocery store, 2 to 8 miles. In some cases, if you live out in a country, further than that. Some of us commute too far to our jobs. An hour commute each way is common in Los Angeles. So yeah, paying for that much for gasoline is a big bite out of our budgets here. But getting back to the food, we're really not in bad shape just yet. I mean, most supermarkets make slim profit margins to begin with. They bank on volume. So while sometimes you might find yourself getting squeezed a little bit at the market, it's usually just the price of everything going up. And it'll stay up, as that woman in the story said, which means that, you know, what you do buy, how much you buy, and limiting waste becomes a little more important. And this all ties into my next story because there's another grocery store strike looming here in California, which would be the second such strike since this show has been online. Same players, same union, same stores, but this time a strike would mean certain death for a lot of companies and a lot of jobs.
The nation's turbulent economy is raising the stakes in the ongoing contract dispute between three Southern California grocery chains and their employees. The workers' union is gearing up tonight for a strike authorization vote this week. New at 11, Eyewitness News reporter Leanne Suter is live in Burbank with more from both sides. Leanne.
Giovanna, in a matter of days, you could see picket lines outside the three big grocery chains, Ralph's, Vons, and Albertsons, on Friday. Union workers are set to take a strike vote, but many are wondering if either side can really afford a strike given the economy. A show of support as grocery workers meet in preparation for a possible strike.
I'm concerned that we're going to have to vote for a strike. What they're offering us, unless they come and change it next week, is not good. I can't afford to lose half of my salary.
Healthcare remains the main sticking point between the union and the corporations representing Ralph's, Vons, and Albertsons.
Union power!
We all remember the 4.5-month strike in 2003. It cost the chains billions and lost revenue as shoppers refused to cross the lines. And for some workers, it ended in bankruptcy.
I've got two kids. I mean, I have a house payment just like anybody else. I mean, but if I have to do it, I have to do it. I've sold the last time. 7 years ago, I sold hot dogs.
This time around, though, the economy is struggling, and there are other pressures. More competition for customers and fewer jobs for workers. The grocery chains say they want to provide a solid compensation package, but in a statement Wednesday, acknowledged the challenge, saying they want to also, quote, produce an agreement that will enable the companies to compete in Southern California in a difficult economy with aggressive low-cost competition. Economist Joel Kotkin says the two sides are locked in a fierce face-off in which neither will come out ahead.
Fundamentally, I don't see how anybody wins. I don't think labor will win. I don't think management will win. And Southern California will have another group of people who are unemployed, which is about the last thing we need.
And Ralph's agrees in a statement tonight. The company said no one wins in a strike, not the customers, not the companies, not the employees. Now, the union insists that it is the lack of negotiating that may force them to make the move. Certainly, a lot of folks will be anxious and watching what happens this week as the two sides are set to resume talks. Live in Burbank, Leanne Suter, ABC 7 Eyewitness News.
Listen, I've said it 100 times. I'll say it 101. Major grocery store chains are absolutely worthless. Only in a pinch would I buy produce there. Only in a pinch would you see me purchasing anything outside of paper goods, ant spray, or trash bags. You do it out of convenience. I sure as shit won't buy beer there. The prices are always way higher than BevMo or Total Wine. The last time that this happened, Trader Joe's saw an amazing sales increase, which lasted. And this time they'll see another one. A lot of these grocery stores that had contracts with these unions ended up going belly up after that first strike. And they renewed those contracts. They were dumb enough to deal with unions, and people were dumb enough to go back to shopping there. Stories of old people. Katrina had one. She took her mom. They yelled at her. It was the only place she could take her mom because her mom knew the store and she could get around there. These old people would go once a week on a limited budget trying to get to the store for milk or chicken. They were confronted by employees at the store that were normally nice to them, intimidated these people to turn around, which they did. Old people. If they do it to old people, they'll do it to anybody. People were getting in fights. They were fighting people out front of the stores. Between the farmers market, Trader Joe's, local Asian markets, Target, Costco, independent liquor stores, there's no reason to ever step foot in a grocery store. I can get everything I would need from that store at another store that doesn't work with union employees. The dark ages are behind us, and I hope this is the final death blow for a lot of these people, a lot of these businesses, because what we're about to see this time is going to get 10 times as ugly as before. And you know what? They all deserve it. The smug checkers, the white trash that works behind the scenes, you'll see them all in full display in a matter of a couple days, a couple weeks, and you'll wonder why you ever line their pockets. And did you see that report out of Miami? They compiled a list of the top 10 worst celebrity tippers. Very TMZ type stuff, which I try to avoid. I don't put a lot of credibility in that. But one person on that list caught my eye because I mentioned her earlier. We've been bagging on her for years for being a shitty tipper on her TV show. But I guess it's common knowledge in the service industry that Rachel Ray is notorious for tipping poorly, as low as 10% in a lot of cases. And for the record, if you go out, if you about 20% is about the norm for a tip if you're out. If you get exceptional service And believe me, people are going to try their very best for a celebrity. You're going to give more than 20%. To make 20% your high is probably shameful, especially if you're a celebrity. I mean, she's not broke. Again, I don't know if it's true, but the rumors are out there, and they've been out there for a while. Speaking of Food Network stars and, like, talk shows, ABC is going to debut a new talk show in September called The Chew. It sounds like The View, probably equally as annoying, but about food. Here's a clip.
The Chew will be a very interesting daily take on what's happening in food, nutrition, pop culture, music, family, and innovative things going on in the world of food.
So here we are behind the scenes, shooting the photo publicity gallery. Everybody's together, everybody looks like themselves. It's kind of a workout. Everybody has their hair character. So I've got my puff, and Daphne has her long goldy locks, and Mario has this little ponytail, kind of like mine, but a little straighter, a little smaller. But yes. Oh, here, hey, here's Goldilocks.
It's kind of an incredible dynamic. It's a great blend of personalities, but I also think it's a great blend of expertise.
Clinton is witty.
Smart.
So creative.
Daphne likes to keep things more on the healthy side.
She's gorgeous. She's gorgeous.
Mario is an icon.
He brings all that Italian love to the table.
Michael Simon, I just keep hearing his laugh.
Loves pork. Porky.
Carla is vivacious.
Happy every single day.
She's also just a zany, crazy, dancing party girl.
Picture the best breakfast, lunch, or dinner party you've ever been to at the coolest house of the coolest person with the most fun.
Yes.
And that's every day.
Yeah, I got one more take at me.
We're going to start with great food and all things food related, but then also expand out into how that affects your life in other ways. And also just making your life a little bit better in other aspects that aren't necessarily food related.
All right.
This is amazing.
Love it.
My favorite thing to eat is anything anyone else makes.
The chefs are the easiest people in the world to please.
Seriously.
The easiest people in the world.
They are.
Well, let's be real though. It's about food, but it's about dishing, really. Yeah. Love to catch up. We love to hear about what's going on.
Exactly.
Get the lowdown.
For me, raised by a Greek Sicilian mother, we've always spent time around the table, and family is a very, very important part of my life, and how I spend time with my nephews, my wife, my friends, and those are the most special moments of my life. So I want people to see that and feel that.
Anything can be celebrated with food. People just get together to celebrate whatever they can so that they can feel good about life and celebrate small, minimal, even regular days or huge successes.
All of us have families, and the Chew's table is going to extend so far beyond the five of us that it's going to be a Chew table all over the country. And it's just like just one big happy family, which is exciting.
The Chew, coming Monday, September 26th to ABC. And for more behind the scenes, check out Facebook, Twitter, and ABC.com.
Beautiful. That's a cut.
Now, I can't criticize it because it hasn't aired yet, but it looks like something my mom would have watched. You know, Oprah leaves TV, soap operas get canceled, and this is what you're going to get in return. I'm happy that Mario's getting a permanent TV gig on a major network. But, dude, don't ever expect me to give this the time of day. I'm not going to talk about this. And, again, I haven't seen it, so I don't know. But Carla, she was great on Top Chef, but hootie-hoo up my ass every day would be like a firm kick in the balls with steel-toed boots. You know, stick this show up your ass, ABC. Seriously. It's got the perfect time slot for housewives and old people. Clinton, that dude from What Not to Wear, nice. They got their token gay. Like I said, look, I haven't seen it yet. I can't criticize it, but I don't think I'll be talking about it. From the outside of this house, that place looks like a dump. I'll give it maybe 6 months for starters. Food Network, look what you've done. Good job. And there you have it. I'm back. I'm bitter, and I'm back. My Life as a Foodie, back, sort of. Sorry for all the drama, certainly the delay, but thanks for your positive energy, for listening, and for being there wherever you are. Thanks to HBO, NBC, CNN, and ABC for the audio. Don't forget to join our Facebook group. Visit mylifeasafoodie.com. Click on the Facebook icon on the right. Become one of the special people in my life. Music in this episode from Blue Stolly and Saliva. If you like the music, you can buy it in the iTunes store. Just follow the links on the website, 99 cents. Until next time, my name is Phil, and this has been My Life as a Foodie. When I see-